Listeners, we're talking to Matteo Frescobaldi, and he has a fabulous extra virgin olive oil, the Demio Frescobaldi. But I would like him to start with, we seem to have spent a lot of time with Frescobaldis, Matteo. Could you explain to us who owns what? We've had lunch at the Frescobaldi Winery. Are you related, or how do you all interact? We also had dinner with the Frescobaldi in Rome.
Yes, I am a member of the family, of the Frescobaldi family. We're quite a historical family with over 700 years of history in winemaking as well as agriculture in general in Tuscany. And this is why we also have an olive oil, which we call Laudemio. So Laudemio is indeed part of the same family and company.
So, no, how does it fit in with the wine?
Sorry, how does?
The winery where we had lunch. I don't remember our host, but it was a Frescobaldi woman.
Frescobaldi woman, you're talking about Laudemio, who launched Laudemio?
Probably. Right.
So that would probably be my aunt, Bona Frescobaldi, who in the late 1980s made the brand Laudemio.
So what all else do you have in terms of companies under the flagship Frescobaldi?
So in Tuscany, we have 9 wineries within the brand Frescobaldi. Our olive oil, Laudemio, and we recently launched a pasta called Pasta Tirrena, which is a pasta made in Tuscany with...
Is that what we had, the Tirrena?
Yes, exactly.
Excellent. Absolutely excellent. We had our children and grandchildren visiting, and everybody went crazy over it. It was wonderful.
Thank you. It's a project that we made recently. We launched it in 2023, and it's a very unique project because it's the first pasta, kind of like a fine wine and our olive oil Laudemio, that only comes from our estates. So we cultivate the wheat in Tuscany.
Right. And it's you do everything right with it. I read the notes that came with it. And, I mean, we've toured enough pasta making facilities to understand how important all these details are, like the bronze dyes that you use, how exceptional
yes.
the product is then.
So the bronze dyes, okay.
Tell us about your olive oil, because we recalled something, Peter recalled something about how it was all your own fruit. And you took the best of it for the Frescobaldi name and then sold off the rest. Is that true?
Absolutely. So the idea behind Laudemio was in the late 1980s to make a fine, excellent quality olive oil that would represent the expression of a certain territory. Just like a fine wine is an expression of a very high-quality vineyard in a certain territory, our idea behind the brand Laudemio was to express the same values of terroir also in the olive oil sector. And we have over 900 acres of olive trees, all in the same area near Florence, which for our vision is very, very suitable for making high quality olive oil. Lower in volumes, but very, very high quality because of the climate conditions,
right,
because of the soil, because of the wind and sun exposition. So all of the things that can make a high quality wine are also present to make a high quality olive oil. And this was the first time that this concept was applied in the olive oil sector in the 1980s, because territory and olive oil is quite a recent philosophy. Before, there were just commercial brands that used to buy olive oil and bottle it. We were the first ones to apply the concept of unique terroir to a certain brand of olive oil. And now today we are applying the same philosophy also to pasta.
Now the grapes and the olives, do they all come from the vicinity of the Castello?
Castello Nipozzano, exactly. They are all in the area of Castello Nipozzano, east of Florence, of the city of Florence, which is also where we have our olive press. So everything is made locally in the same territory.
Do you live in Florence?
Yes, I live downtown in Florence.
Yeah, I went to school at l'Università di Firenze.
Okay, wow.
Long time ago. it's the last time we were there, I could hardly recognize the place. It's been so developed, Florence, hasn't it?
Yes, probably it's quite busier and with more people and definitely more tourists nowadays. It's difficult to walk in the streets.
Yeah.
Right. There are lots of other people walking in the streets. And many of them clearly come from a different part of the world.
Yeah, well, you know, Barcelona is spraying tourists with the water pistols.
I hope that does not happen in Florence, because we are happy that many people visit Florence, and so for us, the tourists are welcome.
Venice is not happy with the tourists. They're starting to clamp down on how many people can come in.
Now, sweetheart, I don't know if you remember, but the last time we were in Florence, one of our stops was at a restaurant that was close to the Opera House.
Yes.
And Mama cooked in the kitchen, and the young lady who had made all the arrangements for us just made sure everything worked smoothly. But it was interesting to position it, a restaurant in a place, in a location like that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Matteo, with all your high-quality restrictions, I mean, making everything top quality, you must have limited production. I mean, how big is your production?
It's quite limited, you're right, because, first of all, olive trees produce a limited amount of olives in our territory, and then, as you said, to make the finest quality, the yield, so the percentage of olive oil inside the olives that we are seeking is very low. So we say that on average, we can make a bottle of Laudemio every tree. So it takes one tree to make one bottle of Laudemio.
Wow.
On average. So Yeah, definitely a very limited production.
So, in many ways, you don't want to market very heavily because you don't have the production size.
We don't want to. Sorry,
market.
Can you repeat?
I mean, there's just a limited amount available.
There's a limited amount compared, fortunately, to the amount of people around the world that would like to enjoy it. So, but indeed, every year we are planting new olive trees in order to keep up with the demand. Of course, it comes at a price, so our positioning and our price is coherent with the limited production that we have. So, in a way, we're not competing in the mass market world, but we are in the very fine quality segment where there's, yes, a limited production, but also a limited amount of people that desire such products.
Now how would you describe your target customer? I mean, do you do more private or more restaurants, or who buys the demio?
I would say it's, especially in the U.S., is both private consumer, so people who enjoy having gourmet products. This would be people that purchase high-quality balsamic vinegars, high-quality pastas, probably also fine wines. So let's say a person who is interested in having gourmet products at home. But then, especially in the U.S., also certain chefs buy our Laudemio to finish their plates in the kitchen. So maybe you don't even know, but when you have a pizza, a pasta, or a salad in some restaurants in the U.S., maybe the chef has used the Laudemio in the preparation.
Uh-huh. Great. Do you keep expanding your plantings, but there has to be a limit to how much you can produce, right?
Since I've started working in our company since 2018, and we have more than doubled our production by planting new olive trees. So there is a limited amount, but we're also trying to expand it.
So what enticed you to go into the pasta production and business?
Because we were already producing wheat in Tuscany. Before making our pasta brand, we were just selling the wheat to the commodity market.
Okay.
And thanks to development of our olive oil business with the brand Laudemio, we thought that we could use our same network of distribution to sell also a high-quality pasta with the same values of Laudemio, which are to come only from our estates, and that we cultivate the wheat in order to make the finest product. And as I said, we launched it just over a year ago, and things are going very well. People are appreciating the product.
Right. People who know olive oil know that certain olive oils from different geographic areas have certain characteristics. What do you think is the strong point or the strong points of the Laudemio?
Yes. Thanks to the climate condition of our territory. There are unique tasting profiles, and our olive oil is very, very spicy, pungent, also very green in terms of taste and as well as color. So in terms of tasting notes, the tasting notes are like artichoke, arugula, and they fit very well most pairings, which go from, as I said, pasta, pizza, grilled bread, grilled meat. So it is a product that is very recognizable thanks to the tasting notes, and most people can enjoy it in most of their preparations, both at home and in restaurants.
Yeah, the thing about it that stands out for me is there's a subtlety to it. It doesn't hit you over the head with a single note. There are kind of nuances and subtleties. How do you get that? Is that the climate, the terroir?
Yes, complexity is definitely a good, value that our product has. So it is not just one straightforward note, like some are just tomato or pine nut or so on. So indeed, it is very balanced and very complex with these different tasting notes, very round. One of the characteristics could be also a green almond note. So there are many different notes. And yes, those are thanks to the territory and to the different microclimates of all our olive groves. Because, as I said before, we have over 900 acres of olive trees. Yes, in the same areas, but they are at different altitudes and different sun expositions. So every year, in a way, our Laudenio is a blend of our different olive groves within the same territory, but with different microclimates conditions.
So you actually have a profile that you aim for in blending the different areas and products.
Exactly. So in October and November, we harvest all of the olives, and we make all the extra virgin olive oil with the intention of making Laudenio. And then once the harvest and the olive oil pressing is finished, we blend some of that production in order to achieve the desired tasting profile. So it's not only made from our olive groves, but then there's also a selection to reach that ideal tasting profile.
Amazing. But you have to have a consistency, which I always thought was the hardest part of producing a brand. You have to have a consistency, and nature isn't always cooperating with that. I mean, you're probably struggling a little bit with climate change in your region.
Thanks to the fact that we have a good amount of olive groves and that we manage all the production phases, so from farming to harvesting to pressing, we are able, despite the difficult climate conditions that every vintage may have, we can give consistency in quality. And of course, sometimes we can have a larger production, sometimes a lower production, which may be due to more favorable or not favorable weather conditions. Yes. But the quality is always there, thanks to the different olive groves that we have.
I mean, how many people do you have working on blending, for example?
It's quite as we have a lot of people on the farm side, and on the harvesting and olive oil pressing, then ultimately the final blending is just the one person.
Really? That's a big job.
Yes.
I mean, a lot of responsibility for one person, right?
Definitely.
Now, you're actually, your publicist was saying that you were making an extra effort to open the U.S. market. That has to be a huge jump for you.
Well, we have been selling quite successfully in the U.S., especially in the past years. We have increased a lot. The U.S. is probably, alongside Italy, our major market. And, yeah, of course, it's difficult in a way, but on the other side, it's very satisfying. Because in the U.S., we do have many chefs and also consumers that are very interested in having high-quality products, especially in the food sector.
Now, what is the easiest way to acquire your product? Let's do both the oil, olive oil, and the pasta. Do you sell online?
We do not sell online directly, but in the U.S. there are a few online retailers that sell our products. For example, there's one called oleotogo.com, which is a good retailer for high-quality oils, but also they have our pasta, Tirrena. And then in other high-quality retailers offline, such as Central Market in Texas or the Fresh Market in the different location of the East Coast. So there are many, let's say, independent, not huge retailers that maybe have from 2 up to 10 locations that have high-quality stores, let's say high-quality grocery stores around the U.S.
Well, I would say that your major thrust would be just getting it into people's mouths, because once they taste it, they'll notice the difference between that and anything else they're going to be good taking. And your care, I think, in producing your olive oil and the pasta, which is exceptional as well. That should put to rest any people's concerns, because there's been a lot of anxiety over what actually they're buying because of the especially in the olive oil industry, the not always what's supposed to be there. Have you had to deal with that?
Yes, you're right. I mean, it's a difficult thing having a brand that you can trust. Laudemia has been on the market for several years. Of course, it's not a brand that everybody knows, so there's still potential to grow and having more brand recognition. But the solution, I must say, it's, to having products that come from a farm, in a way, that the people produce their own olives and their olive oil. Otherwise, indeed, in the olive oil sector, there's a lot of, trading of oil and the falsification of product. So the solution is to buy authentic products from brands that you can trust.
Well, I trust anything with with the Frescobaldi name on it. I've met enough of you. I've met enough of your family members to really trust them. And you too. I mean, to take the time to talk to us, I really appreciate that. I hope you have a good harvest, and I hope that that the climate change does not affect your business very much, because that's a worry. I mean, the wine people we've talked to are particularly upset about climate change, and there's not much you can do about that, right?
Well, I mean, in agriculture, it's always challenging. You always have to work, so it may be climate change, maybe too much rain, and maybe hail. So, for example, in many areas of the world, last year there was a drought, so people were lacking water. Instead, in our territory, we had too much water, which also affected negatively our production, because during the fruit set and the pollination, it was always raining, so the trees were not able to pollinate. So it was kind of having the opposite problem. So in agriculture, we are always subject to the weather, and so the solution is only to work hard. And also try to study the best agricultural techniques and adapt to the different climate conditions.
Well, I mean, it's been pretty extreme here, particularly in California. It's been that and the fires. I mean, it's been it's tearing apart the wine scene here, too. Although the they're actually, California's producing some decent olive oil. Not on the Frescobaldi level, the Lodemio level, which is really special. Matteo Frescobaldi, thank you so much for talking to us. Are you going to keep expanding your product, diverse products, or not product line? Or are you done now for the time?
Well, who knows? You never know. But what we need is to be able to produce products that come from our territory, from our agricultural estates. So pasta with our wheat is, let's say, the future for our, let's say, product expansion. And we just launched it, so for now we will concentrate on Laudemio olive oil and pasta Tirrena.
Yeah, well, the pasta is superb, but your olive oil is wondrous. We've loved that for quite some time. Again, listeners, you want to look for Laudemio Frescobaldi extra virgin olive oil, and you want to look for Tirrena pasta, and I'm sorry I shared it with my relatives. That's terrible. So, anyhow, Matteo, grazie, grazie, and I hope you have a wonderful rest of the day. You're an evening there, I'm assuming.
Yes. Thank you so much. Have a lovely day as well, and I look forward to speaking with you soon.
Great. Thank you again. Goodbye.
Thank you so much.
Podcasting services for On the Menu Radio are provided by ASP Station, www.aspstation.net.
Well, listeners, we're going to be talking to Lisa Zeitel, her company, and we're going to talk a little bit about the backstory of that. It's called Epicurean Pantry, which could be a lot of things and probably may become a lot of things. Right now, her real breakthrough is her product featuring black garlic, which is a mysterious ingredient that we discovered, actually, Lisa, in 2009. And it was being produced in Korea. And by these guys that called us on their time, and it was the middle of the night over there. And then the next thing I know, the whole market exploded with every chef on the face of the globe interested in working with a unique flavor and the health benefits, as you put it, of black garlic. But let's go back to, what did you do in your former life?
So thanks, Anne and Peter, for having me. In my former life, I had a background in nutrition. I was a nutritionist. I got a master's degree in public health. I went on to work in public health, and eventually I migrated to healthcare consulting. So I worked for the large benefit consulting firms for about 30, 35 years and became an executive and consulted to primarily Fortune 50, Fortune 100 clients. And
wow.
I specialized in the area of prescription drugs, you know, trying
wow.
to help people cure them once they were sick. The beauty of what I'm doing now is that I'm trying to prevent them from getting sick.
Being sick.
Via food.
well, you know, with nutritionist background, you must have been very, and also, I might add from what I've read, is that you've been a lifelong foodie. So you've always been interested in food. And to find something with all these health benefits, which is supposedly black garlic, and that's also delicious, you must have really put up a quiet little or loud little interior cheer.
Yes. It happened very serendipitously. I was actually celebrating my 40-plus corporate career sailing in Greece with some friends, and we were on a catamaran, and we had a captain and a chef host, and the chef host, it turns out, is now my Greek supplier. And
uh-huh.
I was not familiar with black garlic before that trip. He incorporated it in our meals throughout the week. I fell in love with it. The more I learned about it, the more I tasted it, all of his products. And a light bulb went off in my head that I knew I was going to find a second act. I just didn't know what it was going to be.
Uh-huh.
And this feels like the perfect second act. It combines my love for food, my love for good health and nutrition, and it's so much more gratifying than what I did in my prior life, and I was very successful at that.
Yeah, well, and Greece, I mean, so all your processing and your producing is done in Greece, so you've got Greek partners.
Yes, so the white garlic, the fresh garlic, is grown in Greece. It's grown in a town called Platykampo, if I'm pronouncing it correctly. It's a town where the climate, it's renowned for having some of the tastiest and nutrient-rich white garlic, fresh garlic, in the world. So you're starting with a premium product. And then my producer or supplier, it's produced consciously. They merge modern technology. He's a computer engineer and his partner is a chef. And they merge that modern technology, the heat chambers, with traditional Korean methods. To create
yeah, which are very, very slow and, I mean, it's really a slow ferment, isn't it, the way the Greek or the way the Koreans did it. That's what I got from my first interview, right?
Yes, so. Correct. It's about 30 to 60 days. They control the temperature, the humidity, and it literally turns black and becomes sticky, licorice-like.
Yeah, but you sent us samples, and you can see that it's quite different from, I mean, you have black garlic, cloves. What are some of the other things you have in your lineup of products featuring black garlic?
I have pearls, honey. Go ahead. I have the cloves. I have a paste. The paste is 90% black garlic and 10% Greek pine tree honey. I have honey, so that's double superfood because it's 70% Greek pine tree honey and 30% black garlic. I have a ketchup, which is a naturally made ketchup, Greek ketchup, with the infused black garlic. And then I have black garlic pearls, which are these beautiful little pearls, like balsamic pearls or caviar, essentially, all plant-based, with some spices, a drop of coffee, a drop of honey, agar agar, and it sits in a neutral oil in the jar. And then I drain each oil once you're serving it.
Now, Lisa, it's grown in Greece?
Yes, grown in Greece.
The interesting thing, I can remember encountering garlic in the flesh just probably only about 15 years ago when we were in the Italian province of Puglia. And we were driving out of Puglia, and you could smell the garlic infusing our vehicle.
Wow.
I love Greece, by the way. I haven't been for a long time, but the economy there is very shaky. I mean, it was a very bold move of you to move into a business deal with the Greek processing.
Yeah, I have a wonderful supplier. They sell throughout Europe. They sell in Australia. They do a lot of business in the Netherlands. The supplier has spent a portion of the year in the Netherlands because part of his family is there. They sell to all the Michelin restaurants in Greece and restaurants elsewhere, and very, very eager to get into the U.S. market. So it's been a wonderful, so far, knock on wood, it's been a wonderful experience. There are some constraints, and eventually some of the, they may move some of the production to Amsterdam or in the Netherlands. Just from a shipping perspective, it might be easier, but it hasn't posed a challenge yet, so hopefully it won't in the future.
Right. Well, a lot of importing companies have a lot of trouble with the American rules on imports. We hear it over and over again. I mean, Spain has a real problem with the stuff coming in, you know. I mean, how many years before they were allowed to bring in the ham? I mean, it went on forever. So, you're so experienced in business as well as nutrition and the taste of the food and the culture of food. But it's still a big, bold jump to get from a corporate environment, structured corporate environment, into an entrepreneurial one. I mean, how did you manage that?
That's a great question. You know, when I first started out in consulting, the firm that I worked with, you know, like many businesses, they were younger in terms of their business age. They were more entrepreneurial. So I actually developed businesses within those corporations, those consulting firms. I moved to another very large consulting firm and built businesses there. So I really kind of left at the time when there was no more entrepreneurial feeling whatsoever. It was pure corporate. So this just feels wonderful because there are no boundaries, there are no rules, there are no, approvals that I need to get from other people that I have no control over. So I'm really honestly loving it. I have a lot to learn, but I love the fact that I'm connecting with lots of people. And so far, it's been just over a year. I'm satisfied with our growth. I want to continue to grow, but we're in 26 stores. We're in a few restaurants as well. And hopefully we'll continue to see steady growth. But I feel passionately about these products. And I know from my past career that passion goes a long way in terms of selling. And I hope here, when I came back and I hadn't really ever experienced black garlic, I went out and I bought other black garlic. There's not a tremendous amount of competition. The biggest challenge is really educating people, making them aware of black garlic, having them taste it and experience it. That's my really biggest challenge. But this, in my mind, tastes so superior to anything that I've tasted here, grown in the U.S., and I love to support the U.S., but in this case, it's not renowned for having, you know, the best quality garlic in the world. So I just feel like it's...
to put it mildly, you're right.
I just feel like this is such a special product.
Now, I mean, our interview with the Korea guys was in 2009. Why didn't it take off right away?
No, I don't know, because there are a lot of chefs who are aware of it.
Yes.
There are some chefs who use it. There's some chefs who I think promote it in the sense they'll make it clear on the menu that it's black garlic, and then I sell in specialty shops that are run by and owned by chefs, and they tell me that they don't always make it explicit that there's black garlic in it, and they just want people to enjoy and experience the flavor.
Well, a lot of chefs are experimenting with it, that I know. How would you describe the flavor of black garlic?
To me, it has more of a, like a tamarind, date-like, balsamic-y type of flavor. Some people may say it's akin to like molasses. It's rich, complex. It just has this very, such a different flavor. There's none of the pungent odor or taste of white garlic. It's more smooth.
It was like almost a magical literal move to make to change the profile, the flavor profile of a whole dish. I can't remember how it was ever described. I mean, how it was ever discovered. I think we probably talked to the South Korean guys about that. But that didn't tell them how to achieve the same thing as it happened in nature.
Yeah, and I wonder historically when they first started, playing around with the fermentation methods, if they really knew that they were onto something from a health benefit side, because it really becomes a superfood once it's transitioned to black garlic. That it almost triples in antioxidants. It's heart healthy. It helps to regulate your blood pressure. It helps to lower your cholesterol. It provides incredible immune support. It can also help with your digestive health. It's a prebiotic. And now there's a lot of...
Does it work against vampires?
Yeah,
I don't know about that. We have to test it.
Guys from Japan, didn't they explain that they had created a new way of processing garlic to make black garlic?
I think so. That was the big contribution. It was the process itself. So how does your process differ from the original Korean process?
I think they try to follow. My supplier tries to follow that process, but just using modern technology in terms of controlling the temperature and the humidity and, you know, modern heat chambers and digital technology. But they do follow that kind of in spirit, that traditional Korean process.
People, I think part of the reason it hasn't gotten even bigger as a public favorite is because people don't know how to actually use it. So I think it's good that you have this outline of ways. Each you have a little chart, and each form of the black garlic, say the pearls, the honey,
right,
the cajun, under that you then have suggestions for how to use it.
Yes.
I mean, that
yes.
might help, I think. I think a lot of your job is going to be in building a company is education.
Yes. Yes, you're absolutely right. And that's part of what I love about it as well. So I'm trying to do that. I do a lot of in-store tastings, which I really enjoy. I love seeing someone put it in their mouth, and then I love seeing the expression once they've tasted it. It's a lot more gratifying than saving very large companies millions of dollars. They don't always thank you. So I enjoy the in-store tastings. I started a blog on our website, and I have posted an article about the amazing benefits of black garlic. I'm digging into each of those benefits, trying to use different avenues and opportunities to continue to educate.
So now we're brought to this point of where does somebody, once we sold them now on this concept of black garlic, where and how does one get a hold of it?
I'm located in Connecticut, very close to the New York, Westchester, New York border. So the stores that I'm in are primarily located in Connecticut and Fairfield County, in Westchester, New York, and in New Jersey. And I do sell through the SAR platform. It's an online marketplace as well for retailers. And I'm hoping to form a relationship with a distributor very shortly, and that would expand my ability to reach more and more stores. But I do have exclusive distribution rights for the U.S., so I'm just, in the process.
Oh, no, that's good.
Yeah.
So you're the only authorized distributor?
Yes, yes.
Of the product from Greece?
Yes, that was part of the appeal to me. And I sell through my website, and I am also starting a TikTok shop. But I think there's a real benefit to the in-store shopping experience.
Right.
There's a lot of education I can do online, but I think it's a great way for people to taste the product and then buy it.
And what about giving our listeners your website?
My website is Epicurean, Epicurean-Pantry, PANTRY.com.
Is it slash? Is it slash?
No, just a dash. Just a dash. Epicurean-Pantry.
Oh, dash. Okay. Now, in some of the copy that was sent to me from your publicist, it indicated that the applications in producing this product is pointing you in the direction of expanding the products that you handle. What does it mean by that? I mean, are you planning on other kinds of products or different uses for the black garlic, or what is your future in Epicurean Pantry?
So my supplier currently produces several more products. Some of them are refrigerated, which I don't plan to import. He partners with some artisanal cheese makers, and they have a couple of black garlic cheeses, which are delicious.
Sounds good.
Yeah.
Where do you find those black garlic cheeses?
Those he sells in Europe. He actually sells to the largest chain of cheese stores in the Netherlands as well. And then he partners with a artisanal sausage maker, and there's a black garlic sausage. So those are delicious. But those would be more challenging to import.
Especially the sausage. Cheese is a tough go. I mean, there are all these European cheeses that can't ever get into the U.S.
Yes.
It's bizarre.
Yeah. So I thought that would be more of a challenge than I was ready for. But he also has a black garlic mustard, which I'm going to add to the collection. I had sampled it at the Fancy Food Show, and it got very positive reviews. He has a black garlic mayonnaise, which is very nice, especially you can make it yourself with the paste and mayonnaise, but it's nice to have it there, you know, already prepared. So that's another opportunity. He's working on black garlic or olive oils with black garlic. He's working on balsamic vinegar with black garlic. And he's also working on black garlic powder.
Wow.
And I have, yeah.
You know, it seems to me, I'm talking to you, I can just envision that awake or asleep, you're always involved with uses and opportunities for black garlic. Is that true?
Yes, and I'm fortunate. I have a sister who had a second act many years ago, who became went from a stockbroker to a chef, went to cooking school.
Oh, really?
In New York, and she lives close by to me, so we have a lot of fun developing recipes, and she loves to experiment with it. So I'm going to also be posting more and more recipes on our website as well to make it easier for people to figure out how to use it.
Well, I mean, I find your suggestions very useful and tempting. The one I can't get my head around is black garlic and chocolate chip cookies.
You know, a woman, an artisanal cheese ice cream maker in a town near me in Fairfield County, she sells small batch artisanal ice cream. She does it. She drops it every, you know, week or so on, you know, you get a text. And that's, she produces out of a kitchen in a restaurant in New Canaan, Connecticut. It's Carla's Creamery. Last year for Halloween, she used black garlic paste. She put a little in chocolate chip cookies, said they were delicious, crumbled them in her vanilla white miso ice cream base, and then crushed the cookies in that ice cream. I tasted a pint. I devoured the whole pint all at once.
I mean, I'll trust your word on it, but I think I'll have to taste this to really believe it.
actually, the Koreans love to dip black garlic cloves in chocolate.
Really?
Yeah.
I can't remember ever encountering it in Greece.
No, I had not encountered it until I was on this sailboat, and I just, so everything feels very serendipitous for me in a very positive way. I met the chef supplier. I came home. My friends who I traveled with, they have very dear friends by where they live who have a consultancy helping new brands, startups mostly in the consumer product goods industry. They helped me with my business plan. Along the way, everything just has felt, that's my word, serendipitous. So it's all, so far, so good.
Well, I wish you continuing success, and that Lisa, Zeidel, again, listeners, it's the Epicurean Pantry. And you're going to be exploring the wonderful black garlic with many more uses than I could ever have dreamed of, thanks to Lisa's research. And believe me, it's going to be in your life for a long while as an upcoming market here. And I just thank you for taking all the time and trouble talking to us about your products, Lisa. So much continuing success. And keep us posted.
I will. Thank you so much, Ann and Peter. I really appreciate this opportunity.
Well, thank you.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.